discharge by operation of law. A contract terminates by operation of law in case of death, insolvency, and merger. Death in personal skill contracts, death terminates the contract, otherwise rights and liabilities pass to legal representatives, which means that in case, only in case of skill contracts where the skill is attributed to the being to an individual, only gets only in that cases the contract gets terminated. Otherwise, all other conditions, the rights and liabilities pass to the legal representatives. Insolvency. Insolvency discharges prior liabilities, transferring the rights and duties to the official assignee or the receiver. So what this means is that, let's say if a supplier is insolvent and the bank takes over his business, then all prior liabilities prior to that date of insolvency, the liabilities are discharged. However, the rights and duties are transferred to the official assignee or to the receiver. Merger. Merger of rights is when inferior and superior rights combine in one person, causing the inferior right to disappear. We understood this when we looked at a bigger supplier and a smaller supplier, where the smaller supplier is taken over by the bigger one. Lapse of time. Contracts end by lapse of time per the Limitation Act. Whenever a contract has a validity date, those dates, if the contract stands terminated or discharged by because of lapse of time, even if nothing else has happened under the contract. Unauthorized material alteration. A contract is void if one party alters its terms without others' consent. Once a contract is signed, let us understand that whatever change, whatever waiver, whatever alteration is required, it has to be with mutual consent. Subsequent or supervening impossibility. Pre-contractual impossibility. A contract which at the time was entered into was impossible to perform is void ab initio and creates no rights and obligations. Section 56 states that an agreement to do an act impossible in itself is void. Fact of impossibility may be known to the parties. The agreement is void ab initio, creating no rights or obligations. A lot of legal terms, let's understand them very clearly. Pre-contracted impossibility. A contract which at the time was entered into was impossible to perform. Somebody agreed, just for example, to give a better perspective, somebody agreed that he would supply some X amount of parts where it was impossible for him to even produce them. Now, in such a situation, it is called as ab initio and creates no rights and obligations. Further, Section 56 states that an agreement to do an act impossible in itself is void. So this agreement is void right from the beginning. Fact of impossibility may be what? Known to the parties. The agreement is void ab initio, creating no rights or obligations. So both the parties know that it is an impossible situation. It is an absolute failure as to why get into an agreement. But if somebody does get into an agreement, that agreement is considered void, creating no rights or obligations for either of the parties. Unknown to the parties, contract is void for mutual mistake if both parties are unaware of an impossibility, which means that both the parties do not know that whatever is being talked of, whatever is being promised, is impossible to achieve. Contract is void for mutual mistake if both parties are unaware of an impossibility. Known only to the promisor. If the promisor knows of the impossibility, they must compensate, which means that if I am the promisor, then I need and I know of the impossibility, that it is not possible for whatever. We looked at that example of the pet being lost, right? Now, in that situation, if I have information that the pet cannot be found because the pet has died, then I must compensate. Discharge of contracts. Post-contractual impossibility. The doctrine of frustration states a contract becomes void if it later becomes impossible or unlawful to perform. What does this mean? This means the doctrine of frustration states a contract becomes void if it later becomes impossible or unlawful to perform. So the contract is signed, and then you realize that whatever other terms and conditions are impossible or unlawful to perform, that the contract is discharged due to post-contractual impossibility under the doctrine of frustration. So grounds of frustration. What could be the grounds of such frustration? Supervening impossibility may occur in many ways, some of which are explained. Destruction of the subject matter of contract. The contract is discharged and no party is liable. What does this mean actually? This means that the subject matter, that means the factory of the supplier or the entire material which is in that factory, is totally destroyed. In that situation, it is a destruction of the subject matter of the contract, which is the main item to be supplied under the contract. Then the contract is discharged and no party is liable. Change of law. A contract becomes void if it becomes unlawful. That means that you have put a condition that there are certain supplies to be made, but if that contract has other conditions which make it void, then if the contract is not valid because of a change in law, then the contract is said to be discharged. Failure of preconditions. A contract is discharged when the continued existence of a certain state of things changes. Let's look at this a little more in detail. A contract is discharged when the continued existence of certain state of things changes. That means, let us say if you are supposed to supply, you have a farm and you are supposed to supply some fruits, but there is a continued existence of a certain state of things. That means that the weather conditions are not congenial and you do not get the required farm produce. In this situation, it is a failure of preconditions. Death or incapacity for personal services. A contract is discharged due to death or incapacity if based on personal qualification. If you were involved to do some software programming, let's say because of your knowledge and because of your education and knowledge and your learning, but either you are incapacitated in an accident or whatever, or if there is death, then the contract is said to be discharged due to death or incapacity for personal services. Outbreak of war. A contract between warring countries is suspended during the war and revives afterwards. Of course, this revival is based on mutual consent. So otherwise, by both parties can, at that point of time, when the countries are warring, they can discharge the contract. The doctrine of frustration. Section 56, para 2 says, a contract is void if an act becomes impossible or unlawful, known as the doctrine of frustration. We understood this earlier. What this means is that the condition that you have given for the law, for the contract to be valid, is unlawful because of certain changes of situation, circumstances, or whatever, known as the doctrine of frustration. Exceptions to the doctrine of frustration. The contract is discharged if performance becomes impossible due to certain circumstances. The doctrine of frustration or supervening impossibility does not apply in the following cases. Difficulty of performance. Difficulty does not excuse contract performance, which means that in spite of any weather conditions or any other reasons where raw material supplies or something has not come, the supplier cannot use that as an excuse just because there is a difficulty for his performance. Commercial impossibility. A wholesale dealer's contract is not discharged by lack of goods, wage hikes, or bad weather unless specified otherwise. The parties likely intended to bear such risks, which means that the wholesaler who has signed an agreement with the wholesale dealer who signed a contract with the supplier or the distributor has to abide by his part of the duties, part of the conditions that he is expected from. Discharge of contracts, strikes, lockouts, civil disturbances and riots. Contracts should not be terminated without a cause for non-conformance or an extension, which means that if there are strikes, lockouts, civil disturbances and riots, this should not be a reason for just terminating a contract without a clause or a mention for non-performance or an extension in the contract itself. Failure of one of the objects. A contract is not terminated if one of several purposes fails. So, what we are saying is that there has to be a solid reason for a failure for a contract to be discharged or terminated. Remedies for breach of contract. Rescission of the contract. If one party breaches a contract, the other party may rescind and is not obliged to perform. So, which means that if the supplier doesn't supply goods, that means there has been a breach of contract from his side, then the company may rescind and is not obligated to pay him for the goods. Suit for damages. Damages are monetary. Compensation for loss or injury ordered by a court. Suit for damages means that a suit is always filed in court, which means that damages are monetary compensation for loss or injury ordered by a court where the person has filed the suit. Compensation for loss or damage caused by breach of contract, Section 73. When a contract is breached, the injured party is entitled to compensation for foreseeable losses or damages, which means that if there is a breach of contract and the person, the supplier, let us say, has already purchased material or has already has people on board for meeting the requirement of the contract, then he is the injured party and he is entitled to compensation for foreseeable losses or damages. Nature. Damages restore the injured party to the pre-breach position. No damage, no claim. Nature damages, damages due to nature, restore the injured party to their pre-breach position, which means no damage, no claim. Rules. Ordinary damages are recoverable. Ordinary damages naturally arise from a breach and can be recovered. Now, ordinary damages is where there has been a delay in supply or a certain amount of absenteeism at the supplier's end. Special damages are recoverable only if the parties knew about them. Special damages arise from a breach under known circumstances, with liability depending on the party's knowledge of the breach's result. Just take this as an extension of an example of the recent festival season. During the festival season, most of the people would like to go back to their native place and be with the family to spend the festival. Now, this is a known circumstance, which means that the supplier and the buyer both are aware that there is likely to be heavy absenteeism, as a result of which there could be a breach. That means there could be no supplies as per the contract. In such a situation, special damages arise from a breach under known circumstances, with liability depending on the party's knowledge of the breach's result. So, these special damages are recoverable only if the parties knew about them. The buyer in this case, if he is affected adversely due to the non-supply of items from the supplier side, he is liable to get recover damages only because he and the supplier both knew about the breach. Breach of contract, again, compensation is recoverable for ordinary damages arise naturally, while special damages arise from known circumstances, which means ordinary damages arise because of the natural functioning of the process, while special damages arise from known circumstances, that is, that something that is planned or is known to happen in the future. Remote or indirect damages are not recoverable. Damages cannot be claimed for remote or indirect loss from a breach. which means that if there is a damage for if there is a damage due to the non-supply of goods, the claim can be only for the loss at the factory, but not because of that a loss happening somewhere at a remote place. Nominal damages for no loss suffered. If no loss is suffered due to a breach, the damages awarded are nominal and minimal. This could just be a sort of a punishment or making the person who is defaulting aware that there could be a bigger damage that he could be avoided. He could be awarded. Indicative or exemplary damages. Damages for breach of contract are given by way of compensation for loss suffered and not by way of punishment for wrong inflicted. But in case of breach of a promise to marry and dishonor of a check by a banker wrongfully, when he possesses sufficient funds to the credit of the customer, the court may award exemplary damages. Let's understand this. Vindictive or exemplary damages. Damages for breach of contract are given by way of compensation for loss suffered and not by way of punishment for wrong inflicted, which means the wrong action is not really being looked at. The consequence or the final outcome of the loss suffered is being compensated. But in case of breach of a promise to marry, that means somebody promises the other person to marry, but there is a breach of promise there. Or if there is a dishonor of a check by a banker wrongfully when he possesses insufficient funds to the credit of the customer, that means that a check has been presented to the bank and the account has enough funds to honor that check, but the banker refuses to do it or refuses to honor that check, then the court may award exemplary damages. The heads for damages. The defaulting party is liable for damages and the injured can recover costs. Liquidated damages and penalty, section 74. Liquidated damages are a pre-estimated agreed upon amount considered reasonable by both parties, which means that if in case there is a breach, then the parties have agreed for liquidated damages at a pre-agreed estimate and both consider that as reasonable compensation. Penalty. A penalty is a fixed sum for breach that does not relate to the actual damage likely to be suffered, which means that the amount of that penalty is pre-decided. Section 74. If damages are fixed, the court won't award more, but may allow less. Sections 73 and 74 should be reviewed when assessing damages. What this means is that if there is an amount that has been fixed as damages as compensation for damages, the court will not award anything more than that. It may in fact award less depending on the situation and the circumstances. So it is always better to look at section 73 and 74 of the Indian Contracts Act should be reviewed when assessing damages. Liquidated damages assess breach losses. A penalty secures performance through a fine. What they are trying to say here is that while there are liquidated damages which assess a breach loss, that means the actual outcome or the loss suffered, a penalty secures performance through a fine. That means that if you want to ensure that the performance continues as required, then there could be a penalty that is put there as a fine just in case if the timelines or quantities are not adhered to. Liquidated damages compensate for actual or probable loss, while a penalty punishes to prevent breach. The penalty is a smaller amount and that is used to actually keep the supplier or the other party in line, aligned to the contract. But liquidated damages compensate for actual or probable loss that the injured party could go through. Section 74. No distinction is made between liquidated damages and penalty. A reasonable rate after default is allowed, which means that your liquidated damages are not differentiated from penalty. A reasonable rate after default is allowed. If somebody has defaulted and there is a requirement for liquidated damages, recovery of liquidated damages or penalty, then the amount is decided as and when it is required. Earnest money and security deposit. A deposit can be earnest money advance or a security deposit fulfillment guarantee and may be forfeited if unfulfilled. Many a times what happens is we want to book a hotel and they tell you to pay advance. Now you pay, you have an option of paying a certain amount of advance. Now this advance is as a security deposit. If you cancel within the last 24 hours, for example, you may not get this deposit back. Now this deposit may not cover the full expenses of the full charge of the room, but it is sort of a compensation for the time and effort spent by the hotel to cater to your requirement. However, you are not honoring your part of the contract. This is where security deposit or a deposit as earnest money, that means given as advance, may not be forfeited if it is unfulfilled, and will be forfeited when it is unfulfilled. Suit for specific performance of the contract. When damages are insufficient, the court may order specific performance under Section 12 of the Specific Relief Act of 1963. This remedy directs the defaulting party to fulfill their contractual obligations and is granted at the court's discretion, which means that once the injured party has filed a suit for specific performance of the contract, because the contract was not performed the way it should have been, then the damages are insufficient. The court may order specific performance under Section 12 of the Specific Relief Act of 1963. This remedy directs the defaulting party to fulfill their contractual obligations and is granted at the court's discretion. That means that there is no escape for the defaulting party but to perform as per the contractual obligations. Suits. Some of the cases where specific performance is ordered by the court are where monetary relief is inadequate, no standard for damage, compensation may not be available. Specific performance is not allowed in the following cases where monetary compensation is adequate, the contract is personal, court supervision is impossible, one party is not competent. Let's try and understand this a little better. Some of the cases where specific performance is ordered by the court are where monetary relief is inadequate. Now, this could happen where there is a big enough loss and a bad name to the reputation or the brand image getting spoiled. Now, that would not be recovered by the monetary relief. And hence, the court would order a specific performance, which means that the defaulting party will have to meet their contractual obligations. No standard for damage. There is no damage standard that is known, that as a result of which then the court would order a specific performance on the defaulting party. Third is when compensation may not be available. The party is not able to make the payment or compensate monetarily or otherwise. As a result, the court will order the only other option is to meet the contractual obligations. Now, come to the other side. Specific performance is not allowed by the court in the following cases. Where monetary compensation is adequate, the court feels that the defaulting party is agreeing to a monetary compensation and that amount that is being agreed to is sufficient to recover the damage. The contract is personal. If the contract was personal with actually no monetary gain or no monetary transaction as a result of some supplies or something, then there is no specific performance. Court supervision is impossible. For this contract or for the defaulting party to go in for specific performance and supervision is not possible, which means that the defaulting party can always claim the next day that they have met with the contractual obligations. In such cases, the court will not go in for specific performance. One party is not competent when either of the parties realized at a later point of time that one of them is not competent to meet the obligations of the contractual obligations. In that case, specific performance is not allowed because the defaulting party is still not able to meet the contractual obligations. Suit for an injunction. An injunction is a court order restraining a person from breaching a negative contract term, which means that if somebody wants to, just for example, wants to default on the supplies, then an injunction is a court order restraining that person from breaching that negative contract term. That means from going in for defaulting on the supplies. Suit for quantum merit. Quantum merit means payment for the work done or as much as one deserves. This means that actually what is the, let's say the contract was to supply 1,000 pieces, but only 200 was supplied. So the compensation here is that the party who has supplied should be made payment for the 200 numbers that was supplied. Under quantum merit, payment can be claimed for work done, even if obligations are incomplete, unlike damages arising from the contract. Exactly explains the example that we took, where a requirement was to supply 1,000 pieces, but only 200 were supplied. So payment can be claimed for the 200 pieces, even if the balance 800 pieces cannot be supplied, which means that the obligations are incomplete. If the original contract exists, the party must rely on damages, not quantum merit, for work done, which means that you cannot always go back to say that how much, you cannot use quantum merit in all cases. If the original contract is already in force, then the party must rely on damages. So we need to refer to the earlier sections, not go in for quantum merit. Generally, the party not in default should claim quantum merit, which means that the party which is injured party should be claiming the quantum merit. The claim on quantum merit arises in the following cases: where there is breach of the contract. If a party performs part of the contract and the other party breaches it, the injured party can claim compensation for the work or service provided. Which means that let's take this case, the case that we took earlier, 1,000 pieces were to be supplied, 200 were supplied, and the opposite party breached the contract. That means they said, no, we don't want any more supplies. Then the party which has given 200 pieces must be paid for the service or work that they have provided. When an agreement is discovered to be void under Section 65, if work is done under a void contract, the performer is entitled to payment. What this means is that even if an agreement is discovered to be void under Section 65, in spite of the void agreement, if work is done under a void contract, the performer is entitled to payment. Of course, we are talking of quantum merit, which means that the compensation or the payment would be for the work done. When something has been done non-graciously under Section 70, when something is done with the intention of receiving payment, not graciously. So quantum merit is actually compensation that is given to a party for doing something, not just out of gratitude. That is what is meant by when something has been done non-graciously. Where work has been done by the person guilty of breaking the contract. If the contract is divisible and the defaulting party has performed part of the work, they may claim reasonable compensation for the work done under the principle of quantum merit. Which means that let us say these 1,000 pieces are to be supplied in 4 batches of 250 each, or something that is mutually agreed. Now, if that is the case, and if the contract and the defaulting party has performed part of the work, which means that he has supplied 2 parts, whatever was agreed in the required quantity, they can claim reasonable compensation for the work done, in spite of the fact that either they are not able to supply the balance or the other party doesn't want the material. This is possible if two conditions are met. The contract is divisible, which means that there should be a condition in the contract that batches of supplies are acceptable. The other party has benefited from the partial performance. Even though the defaulting party is liable for the breach, they are entitled to payment for the completed portion. Which means that in our example of 1000 pieces, 500 was supplied, and the party who received those 500 pieces used them in their production and were able to complete the full production or the finished goods, which can earn them some income. In such a situation where there has been a benefit to that party, even though the defaulting party, that means the party who is supposed to supply the balance 500, is actually liable for the breach, they are also entitled to payment for the completed portion, that is the 500 pieces. Where the work is divisible, a party who performs part of a divisible contract and refuses to complete it can claim compensation for the work done based on quantum merit. If the contract is divisible and the other party has benefited from the partial performance, which means that if a company or a supplier gets into a contract with you and the contract is divisible, which implies that the contract has specified that there is a staggered delivery to be made, 25%, 25%, 20% or whatever is the percentage of supplies to be made, then the party who has supplied part of that quantity, that means that 25% as the first batch, 25% as the second batch, they can claim compensation for the work done based on the quantum merit. But the conditions are that the contract has to have a mention of it, and once those supplies are made, those supplies have benefited the company that received the supplies. If the contract is indivisible, the defaulting party cannot claim payment for partial performance on a quantum merit basis, which brings us to the condition that the contract has to have the divisible term or the condition very, very specifically written and documented in it. If there is no such condition, then the defaulting party cannot claim payment for the partial performance on quantum merit basis. When the indivisible contract is performed, substantially or fully, if work is completed poorly, the performer can claim the full lump sum, but deductions can be made for bad work. Of course, nobody likes bad work, so there could be definitely, but the defaulting party needs to be paid also for whatever has been supplied. Now, let's say in our example, if the 1000 pieces were supplied completely, but they were not of the required quality, then although the supplying party may claim the full sum, the deductions would be made for bad work or for bad quality. Bailment and pledge. Bailment is the transfer of goods and pledge is bailment for a loan. Types of bailment: bailer's benefit, bailee's benefit, mutual benefit. Let's first understand what this means. Bailment and pledge. Bailment is the transfer of goods. That means the transfer of goods here is the ownership, transfer of ownership of goods. And pledge is bailment for a loan, which means that there is a transaction involved here and an amount. Types of bailment: bailer's benefit, bailee's benefit, or mutual benefit.